Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and across from me, back over here, taking care of business, being an excellent husband over the past weekend, past week in general, from what I've heard, give it up for my man, of course, Stephen Weasel Hurley. Weasel Weasel!
Yeah, boy!
I have to lead the show with that, during the theme and all that, with you coming back. Always good to have you here in the Student of the Game studios, here on the National Gridiron Network, bringing you football talk. Just the way you like it. I am really stoked about the show today. On top of the fact, our good friend in the second half of the hour here, Teron Davenport, will be aboard bringing us the pure gold that we've come to expect from him whenever he talks or writes football. We'll be also hosting Dr. Stephen Novicki, who is the creator of Shock Strips. What are those? It's a little device you put on your helmet and it listens to shock. We'll get into all that here at about the 7:40 time when he is due to join us here into the show. But I want to go ahead and get off on the foot and talk a little bit about a bit of free agency, a little something else took place over the past couple weeks here. And you may have missed us talking about it. I talked about it a little bit with Brandon Howard, I think, last week, which, by the way, if you have not heard last week's episode about that little dive we took into college football with something special, Weasel, you unfortunately missed a good show, so you need to listen to it. It's brilliant. Brilliant. Word. No. At any rate, so for those who haven't heard yet, Chris Johnson, no longer a Titan, he is with the Jets, had a lot of speculation, a lot of talk, a lot of people even making the statement that Chris Ivory and Bilal Powell, the incumbent Jets running backs, the new team, of course, that Chris Johnson is playing for, is just as good as an option, if not better than anything Chris Johnson would have to the table. Weasel, give me your initial reaction.
Well, for Chris Johnson on the Jets, it was definitely a big move for them. And what they gained, I believe that the Chris Johnson holds the current streak for 1,000-yard seasons. And what's interesting is for his 6-year career, he's been pulling in the 1,000-yard seasons. And even though, like, from 2009, where he had over 2,000 yards.
Where he got CJ2K from, of course.
And then he only had 11 touchdowns. And he only had 1,364 yards.
Only. But, we've talked about that on this show before. Only.
I just think with him, it's like, I don't know with the Titans, if he didn't get the holes opened up too much. Because I think, you know, he's not a power runner.
Right.
But he's pure speed.
Right.
So, we'll see how the Jets' offensive line helps them out or not.
Well, another aspect, too, that's worth mentioning, of course, is the existence of, you know, Jake Locker as the quarterback for the Titans. And if you have, like, a Jake Locker, or if Jake Locker's hurt, his backup, Ryan Fitzpatrick, is at the helm, folks, check it out. What do you think you're going to try to stop first? Are you going to be worried about Jake Locker? Or are you going to be worried about Ryan Fitzpatrick? Not really, no. I'm going to look at, you know, CJ2K here, get him demoralized early because he's proven that could happen. O-line hasn't been as good as it has in the past with Steve Hutchinson, the guard, former Viking, former Seahawk as well, no longer in the lineup. And look, I'm not saying that he's not declined, but by the same token, there were other things that kind of helped to bring the numbers down. It's enough to account for, let's say, 2,000 to 1,300. Now, there's a lot of people going into this coming season wondering if he'll even get 1,000 yards. I don't know if I'm that strong on that. I'll throw it to you on this one, Weasel. So the Jets, you know, we have Geno Smith as a rookie, but then they picked up Michael Vick as well. So either way there, I think they're going to be at least decent at the quarterback spot. They're better than a lot of other teams. No, that wasn't a shot at the Vikings, but they just happened to be one of many, dude. I'm sorry. It's not what I meant. But they have that going there. Eric Decker at the receiver spot is an upgrade.
Would you consider him a possible number one wide receiver, or is he a pure number two type?
Eric Decker is going to be the number one wide receiver.
Not going to be, but is he a number one wide receiver
for an NFL team? No, I don't think so. And again, we've been over this on the show in the past. I'm still not sure what to make if you look at his tape in the pros, okay? We've been through this one more time. Quarterback number one Eric Decker received passes from was?
Peyton Manning.
Wrong. That's quarterback number two. The first quarterback, come on. It's an opportunity to do your favorite thing into the microphone for the Broncos.
Oh.
Before, yes.
Tebow.
Yeah, that guy. Tebow. See, I knew you'd catch up with me.
Yeah.
So, no, but so he's either had Tebow, who's knocked for having an inconsistent and being just a generally bad quarterback, or having a future Hall of Famer in tow and going to the Super Bowl with this guy. You don't really see what he really has to bring to the table when that's the case. So you're in that awkward moment of, is he really that good or isn't he? I don't know. It's a tough place to be when you're in that set. So I right now don't think Eric Decker is a number one receiver the way you ask it. But I'll tell you what, he's got a very interesting opportunity to try to improve that. And, you know, it could only help when you have a guy like Chris Johnson who's going to be in that backfield to assist in the effort to spread out that offense. Now, do I think the Jets will be great? No. Do I think they'll make the playoffs? No. Are they improved? Yeah. And that's really kind of the point. Personally, I think Rex Ryan has a lot more work to do with that defensive staff, with the people who have gotten old and moved on, and it's a whole big mess up there in the general East Rutherford area. Not to insult my good friends who are on press coverage, John Presser, Matt Falkenberry. I'm not getting on to you. I'm not trying to hate the Jets. Just right now, I feel like they're still kind of in that transitional period. They're moving towards the next step. You know. But speaking of moving towards the next step here, I'm looking on the switchboard. It's time to move to our next part of the show here. Something I've been looking forward to since I started talking about talking with him and trying to get this all set up. And we have with us Dr. Stephen Novicki. He is an expert on player safety right now, the whole concussion discussion that you've heard about in the NFL, and is also the creator of a product known as Shock Strip. Also played a little bit of football himself. And apparently, Blog Talk Radio is not the good doctor's friend. Goodness gracious. I'm going to need him to go ahead and have him call back if he can. That, I don't know what happened there. Wow. So, doctor, if you're listening, please call back in. But so what we're trying to figure out is, you know, what is the next big thing in the NFL with concussions and all that? I don't really know exactly that would be, but this is why we're having, you know, having a doctor on here, and hopefully we are all set. Dr. Novicki, do we have you back?
Yes, you do. How are you, Kyle?
All right, fantastic. Thanks for coming aboard, sir. Sorry about that technical difficulty. That is what it is, being live on the air sometimes. Some things happen, but you're here. I'm glad to have you aboard, and let me tell you up front, Weasel and I here, we're ready to have some good education, but before we get into all that, I wanted you to tell us a little bit of your story. You know, you used to be, you used to play some football back in your day, and you worked to get your doctorate in chiropractics. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got to the place where you were moved to set up the Shock Strip product.
Well, a little bit about myself is I played football, and I played 7 seasons. And I had the opportunity to go to a couple of combines in the early 80s with some USFL teams. And what eventually ended my career was helmet-to-helmet impacts, because I just couldn't take the headaches anymore. Wow. And the ringing in the ear. And it really stopped. It really stopped my career, because I couldn't take it anymore. I got tired of every practice having headaches in every game. So, unfortunately, I stopped playing football, and I went back to college, and I ended up becoming a chiropractor, as you said. And I started to see a problem in my office with a lot of younger kids around football season. And what was happening is these kids were coming in, and they were complaining of what we now know are symptoms from helmet-to-helmet impacts. They were having some headaches, they were having some ringing in the ears, and they had some other symptoms of that. And I sat back, and I was really concerned, and I thought, you know, there's a big problem here. So I started to research what was going on with the helmet, and I wasn't satisfied with the direction it was going into. And I looked into what about putting more padding in the helmet, and that wasn't a feasible idea at that time. So what I eventually did was is I contacted some engineers and sat down and said, look, this is the problem we're having, and this is what I want to do, and this is the direction I'd like to go with it. And fortunately, I had some great engineers, and we came up with a final version of Shockstrip, and I aligned myself with a company out of Hagerstown, Maryland, called Action Products, and they had, in 1973, formulated a formula of a material by a PhD in chemistry, Dr. William McElroy, that was able to absorb and deflect impacts. And when I approached them in June of 2010, they were a little skeptical about what I was doing, and they took the my ideas and my prototypes, and about 3 months later, they called me back, and they said, we love it. We think we've got what you want. We took it to testing, and we were very happy with the testing. We had it drop tested, and then we had it linear impact tested, which are the two gold standards of testing that we have currently. And ultimately, we refined it to where we were getting about 41% decrease in the impact, and we were noticing that we also were getting a decrease in the angular acceleration, which is the big buzzwords with concussions today, because that's the big concern. The linear impact are a concern, but the angular acceleration, when that head starts spinning and that brain's getting torqued inside the skull, that's when we saw a lot of problems, or that's when a lot of problems occur. And we also noticed that with the shock strips on, that there was up to about 22% decrease of the upper neck stress loads with one player wearing them, and a decrease of about 28.4% with both players wearing them. So we were really happy with where we've come with, how far we've come, and we're on about 500 players across the country, and we've seen phenomenal results with it, and we're continually moving forward.
And something I wanted to make a little bit clear, because I hadn't heard about it before I started doing my research a bit, having you on, and that's the impact is important, but the sound, that crack that you get when you get that big thud of a hit, is actually responsible and capable of doing a bit of damage in itself, and the shock strips kind of minimize that. But as far as just the sound of it, kind of walk us through how that actually does damage to the player just as much as the impact you were referring to.
Well, what happens when you get that big crack? That is a high frequency sound. And what it's actually doing is it's damaging, especially at the youth age, because the brain doesn't completely form until about 22 years of age. So in the younger kids, when they're getting that big crack, that's actually sending that high-frequency noise through their ears, and it's been shown to actually cause inner ear damage also. So with the shock strips on, it's decreasing that loud crack, and we're hoping that from what we've seen, it's decreasing a lot of those inner ear problems.
Right, and I mean, the comparison I kind of put to it is if, like, someone comes up behind you and whaps you on the ears, you know, open-handed or whatever, it's just that sound inside the helmet there. I mean, that's the first thing that came to mind. When I read it, I'm like, oh, and I didn't even think about it. Now, granted, I played on the line, so I'm not into that as much of that full speed impact. Well, not to mention, you know, I'm full speed for me is like, you know, not very fast being a lineman, but that's a different topic. But kind of the piece, the main reason why I want to have you on is really kind of moving forward. Like you were mentioning a lot of stuff where you have the drop tests and the linear collision tests. And I was looking on your site, and you know, a very legitimate point is made that the toughest part, a linear test where the two player where the two helmets will collide head on, is a good test to have because that does happen sometimes. But hey, look, we were just talking about Chris Johnson earlier and Eric Decker earlier. These guys didn't make a living by taking hits head on. They're moving, they're dodging, they're jucking and weaving, and it's these angular hits. And do the shock strips provide any protection for that, or how does that work?
Yes. What we did was we took one of the 5-star rated helmets from the Virginia Tech study, which was the Riddell Revolution Speed Classic, and we had it tested for angular acceleration. And like I said, with one player wearing it, it decreases the angular acceleration up to 10.5%. And with two players wearing it, it decreases as much as 12.3%. And we felt that those numbers were very, very important, and they're very good numbers because they're a great starting point, because if we can start decreasing angular acceleration that much, then we have the possibility and the potential to reducing the damage from the helmet-to-helmet impact that a lot of these kids are suffering today. And as a lineman, you have to remember, even though you guys aren't moving at full speed, there's tests that show, and testing has shown that the repetitive small impacts that you guys are taking are actually causing a lot of damage. And we hear a lot of the linemen saying, man, I feel a lot better with wearing these on. I don't have a lot of the problems I was having at the end of the game. I don't feel as fatigued as I did at the end of the game because, you know, you're taking those repetitive small hits, and those eventually, it's just like a boxer. It's a jab, a jab, a jab, and eventually there's the knockout. It's, you know, you take so many of those that you just can't take them anymore and you're done.
Yeah, and you know, by the way, if you're coming on this show and showing love to the trenches, you're automatically respected, doctor. That's not a problem. But I like the way you put at it with the repeated small hits, because even if they're like, even if you're stopping like a corner blitz or a safety blitz or whatever, and somebody who you outweigh, that's all great. They're coming at full speed. You're stationary. They impact your head. That's where it happens. And to be honest, I hadn't really thought about it too much till right then, but perfect sense it does indeed make. So, hey, there you go. I said up front, I knew I would learn stuff tonight. It's happened already. Weasel, I'm excited. This is good.
It's awesome.
This is good. Anyway, the question I wanted to ask next for you there is moving forward, like you mentioned the starting point a lot in what you're talking about with your research here. What, in your mind, is kind of the next step? Kind of give us the state of the art, so to speak. What is the latest, if shock strip and this action, it represents the latest problems we've started to solve, what's next on the list? What's the next phenomena you may think we're trying to beat in the whole concussion discussion?
Well, the biggest problem we're having is proper tackling techniques, and that's where it all starts. If we could get our kids and we try to teach our players, see what you hit and hit what you see. And that's where shock strip comes in as a learning tool, because you see it on another player's helmet. So remind you, keep your head up, hit what you see what you hit. And, you know, don't keep that head down. That's when a lot of the problems start. And I think if we can get these kids to keep their heads up when they're tackling, we're going to see a big reduction in this problem alone. And then if we add shock strip on top of it, we even see a bigger reduction in it. And so it's just going to continually move forward and get better and better as the kids they work on their tackling technique. Because I always told kids, the best part of tackling is when you see the whites of a guy's eyes open up like cue balls, because he knows you're going to blast him. And when you lean into him with your shoulder, you can really put a good tackle on him. And that's what tackling is with the shoulders and the arms, not the face mask and the helmet. So that's where we're trying to get the next big push to is technique and shock strips on their helmets as a device, as a educational device, because they see it and it reminds them at the end of every play, look, keep your head up. And that's what we're trying to do, and that's the direction we're headed in.
Now, I got a question about the college and NFL. Now, if there was a player on a college team, and he says, hey, I want to wear the shock strips. And similarly, in the NFL, I think there were some players would like to be a little bit more safe.
Yeah.
And what are the blocks and the barriers that they have to go through in order to wear those shock strips? Or like, what's the reason behind them not having it like in the NFL or college?
Well, You have to remember, the NCAA and the NFL, they're doing their due diligence because they are concerned about this problem. Now, the good thing is the NCAA, we've spoken with them and we've spoken with the NFL. The NCAA right now is, if a player wants to wear it or a team wants to wear it, is all the NCAA has asked us is to have the players inform them that they're going to wear them, or the AD from the school call them and let them know that they're going to wear them. And they're okay with it. At the NFL level, there's a lot of strict rules with the NFL. So at this time, we've been given the allowance to, if the player wants to wear them in practice, they can wear them in practice. And we believe that once the player wears them in practice at the NFL level, they're going to say, look, I want to wear this in a game. And I think if the players start to put the pressure on the NCAA a little bit more and the NFL and say, look, we wore it in practice, we like it, we want to wear it in games, I wouldn't foresee a big problem with it because the NFL knows, the NCAA knows, they've seen all of our testing, and we've spoken with committees from both, and they're both very impressed with the product, and they like what they see. It's just like what we've been told, it's a due diligence issue. So a lot of the bridges have been opened up for us because they've seen the testing, they've seen what we've done, they've seen the manufacturer, or they know about the manufacturing and everything. So they're becoming a lot more comfortable with the device. So a lot of the bridges that we had to cross 2 and 3 years ago, we've crossed, and it's getting a lot easier for players who want to wear it to basically go to the league and say, look, we're going to wear this, and this is what we want to do, and we've been given the green light on that.
It's good to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that definitely represents a step in the right direction when you got pros wearing them in practice and you got the NCAA guys definitely wear them during games or whatever. If that's happening, then some of those guys, as they move on and get drafted, they'll become pros that want to use them. It's definitely a step in the right direction. And, hey, an overall good thing to supplement this due diligence. You mentioned with the NFL, and it's definitely been a hot button for the past few years, I to say the least. I mean, I'm kind of stating the obvious here, if you followed this at all. I mean, I know we've talked a bit about concussions and CTE on this show, and I'm going to ask something that may seem like an obvious question to you and I there, Doc, but, you know, just to make it clear, the term we're using here in a lot of our discussions seems kind of short-term. This obviously would be preventative for any sort of long-term things you have with players as well. I mean, you know, obviously we've all heard about the case with Junior Seau by now and the chronic traumatic encephalopathy. But, see, I wanted to show off that I could pronounce that right, too, for the doctor. What can I say? But, I mean, obviously, you know, there would be a long-term benefit for this as well, right?
Most definitely. Because if we can decrease the severity of the impact, we can decrease the severity of the angular acceleration, we've shown that we can decrease the stress loads on the neck, and everything's positive. So if we've got those positives going for us, our engineers have come to the decision that this is not going to only protect them short term, but over the long term, because of we're decreasing and those numbers as far as the angular acceleration and the stress forces on the neck, it's going to be best for the player in the long run.
Yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely. Well, Doc, now we got the opportunity to give you a bit of a platform. If there was any sort of fact, if there was any sort of thing that needed to be made aware about concussions or shock strip or any of that, what is a message that you'd want to get out there and make sure that we walk away with the listeners of the Student of the Game having learned today? What is it that enough people don't know about this topic that you feel they should?
The biggest thing I would say is that what is being said about external helmet devices is that they void the warranty on the helmet. And what I'd like people to understand is, number one, the warranty has no product liability, meaning if you got a concussion with a helmet on, some helmet company is not going to send you a gift card to go to dinner somewhere or a bouquet of flowers. The helmet warranty has no product liability. So if you get injured with that on, that warranty doesn't do anything for you. And shock strip is not the first device out there that has been voided the warranty by the helmet companies. What people don't realize is if you read the warranty, it says if you replace any guard, mask, or non-original equipment part, there's four parts to a helmet. There's a shell, a padding, a face mask, and a chin guard. And in the warranty, it says if you replace the chin guard, you void the warranty. Well, there's other companies out there that make aftermarket chin guards, and kids are changing them all the time and putting them on, and they're playing football fine with them on. So we try to tell our parents, do not let something as simple as a warranty on a helmet deter you from putting or making the helmet safer by utilizing shock strips. Because odds are, I've walked in the locker rooms and coaches have said, well, you know, the helmet rep said that it voids the warranty. And I'll look around the locker room and I'll say, well, all your players have different brand name chin guards on other than the helmet companies. You understand that voids the warranty. And the coaches are shocked when they find out that also voids the warranty. But they feel that a padded cup chin guard is better for their players, so they allow it. And that's the biggest thing I'd like the people to know is, you need to take control of the safety of your players. You can't let a company dictate what you're going to do by saying, oh, that voids the warranty. Really? If it voids the warranty, we're going to be concerned about more of a warranty than the safety. And the good thing is, if it does void the warranty on the helmet with certain helmet companies, our company gladly picks up that warranty because that's how sure we are that ShockTrip is not going to do any damage to the helmet or change the capabilities of the helmet. When it does change the capabilities, it's positive. So that's a great question. Thank you for asking because that's what I'd like people to know. Ultimately, take charge of the safety of your child and not let a warranty decide what you're going to do. Now, if the warranty had product liability value, I would say, there you go. All day. Don't do anything to it. But it doesn't. So that's the biggest thing that I'd like people to understand and remember when they're purchasing shock strips.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the chin guard piece right there. I mean, hell, I know for a fact on my own helmet, like, because the chin strap they gave you is, you know, pretty dinky, and if I take a bear claw to the chin, it didn't do anything for me, so I changed it out, bam, right there, it's gone. And well, from what you're saying, it doesn't matter a whole lot anyway, because it's not like it'll do very much in the first place, so I might as well be protected. I can appreciate this vibe. Absolutely. Wow, there you go, learning stuff left and right. I knew this was gonna happen today, Doctor. That's all I can say. Weasel, you got anything else?
No, I think you're doing a great thing, and keep it up.
Okay, cool. Before we let you go, Doctor, go ahead and tell the good people where they can find you or get more information about shock strips.
You can go on shockstrip.com. All of our latest testing information is on there. My numbers, there's a number on there to reach me directly or email directly. I tell everybody, please feel free to call me. If there's any questions, concerns you have about shock strips, call me directly, and I will ease those concerns because we have heard pretty much every question and concern that we can from parents out there, and we've rectified or in engineering before we even started out making the prototypes that we've taken care of all those concerns. So go on shockstrip.com, give me a call, send me an email. If there's any concerns or questions, I'll gladly take the time to get on the phone with you and talk to you and discuss the situation or concerns you have.
Fantastically done. Thank you very much, Dr. Stephen Novicki. We'll probably have you on the show again another time because I don't feel like there's enough education on this out here. I mean, just in the time we spoke here, Doc, I learned at least three different things. So for me, with this issue, you said it yourself. It's about the awareness of it with several various different things, from the helmet product liability piece to the coaches being involved in the process with both the teaching of tackling and sharing this knowledge to the players about, you know, the helmet themselves. It's like, well, hey, look, if you do that, the chin strap doesn't matter, you know, that kind of thing. And it's all fantastic stuff. And hopefully we can arrange another learning session in the not too distant future.
Anytime you'd like me back, you know I'll gladly come back, and I enjoyed it. Thank you guys very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. All right. We'll see you next time. That was Dr. Stephen Novicki. I'll tell you what, Weasel, first of all, I had no idea it affected him as directly as it did. Like, I knew he was a former football player, but I didn't know he was suffering headaches. And he was, I mean, I didn't know he was at the USFL level back in that day too. I mean, that's for those kids that, you know, that's what mommies and daddies used to call, you know, the XFL. No, I'm just kidding. But I mean, that's a league that Donald Trump started. A lot of significant NFL talents came out of that. I believe Jim Kelly was involved with it and Doug Flutie, maybe. I don't want to reach too much because, I mean, I wasn't that old back then either. So I don't want to be too murky in my memories, man. But I mean, I don't know, Weasel. The entire piece about, I play the line spot, and he's telling me stuff about the small punches. I'm like, wow. It kind of mind-blowing stuff there. I mean, I don't know, man.
It's definitely very knowledgeable. And one of the things I like about the shock strips is that it's not going to slow down a player. It's not something that people, I think I've heard that people want more padding in the helmet and for stuff like that. But this is it's a design, and it's something that it won't change their play on the field. So I think other things, yeah, they with the helmet technology, because for the past how many years, helmets kind of look the same. Sometimes I see these grooves in them or yeah. going back, but as far as preventing concussions and such, I think it's a great idea.
And I mean, when you look at it on the surface, it's conflex versus concave. I think I'm getting it right. The grooves are basically, the shock strips are kind of the outward version of that. So, closet physicist here, right? There's less surface area for the helmets to thunk each other, which then spreads the absorptive shock, probably why they're called shock strips. Ba-bing! Anyways, we're at that time. We're going to go ahead and take our break real quick, and then shortly after, we'll be hosting one Teron Davenport, bringing us the awesome from the draft. Looking forward to that, most certainly. This is the Student of the Game on the National Gridiron Network.
The National Gridiron Network. Join us as we tell you what is happening with your favorite team in the NFL or the NCAA. Listen in as we preview every football game, week by week, to the end of the season. Follow us at NationalGridironNetwork.com and read up on the latest that is happening across the football landscape. NGU, football talk, just the way you like it.
Of course, we are back here on the Student of the Game, bringing you football talk just the way you like it here on the NGN. Weasel, man, I got to tell you what. There's always a lot of conversations around contracts during this time of year. Nothing shocking here. And thanks to Tony Romo and Joe Flacco and Matt Stafford and Aaron Rodgers, last year, quarterbacks are making astronomical cash. And now fast forward to this season, Jay Cutler among the list of quarterbacks to get pizzayed, as they say, because he wasn't just paid, I don't think. I don't know. But I still kind of feel like Cutler's deal was warranted. But as far as warranted deals go, there is talk. There's two pretty major quarterbacks in the news wanting to get paid themselves. Of course, I refer to the 49ers, Colin Kaepernick, and the Cincinnati Bengals, Andy Dalton. Let's go ahead and take it to the Ginger Ninja first. I think the statement is that Andy Dalton wants to be paid like he's the face of the Bengals franchise. Yeah. Sounds interesting on the surface.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Weasel's jumping on. No, get in, man. Yeah. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, he was. He wants to be paid like the face of the Bengals. Now, for Cincinnati, they've had some, years of like bad streaks.
Not just years. Yeah. The last time they've been to the Super Bowl was the 80s. The 80s.
Icky Shuffle. Hey, last from the past.
Don't you dare hate on the Icky Shuffle, bro. I mean, that is vintage at this point. Also aging myself ridiculously, referring to something I saw as a child as vintage. Weasel, keep going before I get depressed.
I believe he's I think it's a third or fourth year quarterback. And one thing that you notice with
he is a fourth year, by the way. He will be a fourth year.
Okay. For the Bengals, they're, I think, in the past three seasons or so, and he's, led the team to the playoffs. It's nice that he has a security blanket with AJ Green. You just throw the ball up in the air, call 500, and
500.
AJ Green will bring it down. So it makes him look a little better, but I think he's got a case, but I mean, not just like $18 million or anything like that. I would like for certain contracts, I like more incentives about like playing, like a performance in playing,
okay,
and stuff like that. Instead of just throwing these guys like 2 years, you're getting paid like $36 million, and Colin Kaepernick, I would say like over 10, and for Andy Dalton, over $10 million, I would say. Over 15 would be a bit much, but I mean, both of them, they did lead their teams in the playoffs, and Kaepernick's got the Super Bowl under his belt, so.
Oh, the Super Bowl appearance. Right. Let's not jump the cap just yet, because there's other things in place there that make that more complicated. Let's stick with Dalton here in this particular case. And when it comes to Dalton, look, you mentioned it right there. This cat, armed with pretty much only AJ Green and Jermaine Gresham took these cats to the playoffs three consecutive years. Okay. Moreover, last year, that defense did have his back a bit for a while, but was scarred by injury. Leon Hall out. Geno Atkins out. I think they had at least three starters on defense out as well. It would have been a lot rougher if certain players hadn't stepped up. But I think what makes this pill bitter to swallow isn't so much his performance in the past 3 years. Because as a rookie, for example, that play that J.J. Watt made as a rookie himself, intercepting him from the defensive tackle spot, just catching it out of the frickin' air and running into the end zone. The play that made me fall in love with him with my man crush, J.J. Watt. Okay. That's right. Are you going to front?
Can't front on that.
Damn right you can't front on that. Anyway. No. But in all seriousness, so, okay, I can definitely let that slide. Last year, I didn't really feel like they were going to win that game either because the Texans had a lot of hype on their side. Backup quarterback in play or not. But, okay, so from the fans' perspective, they have back-to-back losses to the Texans in tow, and then last year's playoff situation where that offense just went out and just laid a brick on the field and did a whole lot of ouch. I mean, Dalton had that Eli Manning-esque headfirst dive where he lost the ball at a crucial time. A.J. Green dropped at least one touchdown pass.
Overrated.
Ouch.
Just kidding.
I hope so. I was like, dang! Hyperbole much, kid? Oh, my goodness. No, but and then on top of that, the rookie running back Giovanni Bernard had a pretty bad fumble loss himself. I believe that was inside the red zone. A lot of, if you take this back, they have a shot kind of situations. And it's just a situation. I don't feel like all of that should be put on Dalton. But as a quarterback, yada, yada, yada. So I feel like he's got equal elements of good and bad in the discussion. Yes, he ripped the Bengals from mediocrity on the offensive side and led them forth with his rubber wedding ring and all. If you saw Hard Knocks, he actually has a wedding ring, a wedding band made of like rubber or something so he can wear a wedding ring in practice. Whatever. That superstition and the like, that's fine. But pulling that offense forth to propel them to the playoffs and then the defense with Geno Atkins and company following along. It was meant to be a great thing. Heck, you remember, I picked them as a Super Bowl candidate. And then 65 injuries later. But they beat the Packers before they got all their injuries. They beat the Patriots last year. They show promise. And then they go out and need an overtime to beat Thad Lewis and the Bills. I mean, dude. So, I think that Dalton is stuck in a similar place as Matt Ryan, meaning, and we all know how I feel about Matt Ryan as the new Tony Romo, yada, 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 meaning he's too good to get rid of, but he's not good enough to be free of questions. I mean, yeah, I don't know if you can put it any better than that. I don't know. So, let's swing it over to Colin Kaepernick here for a minute. Now, he's someone who's in the news a lot lately, and not just for the whole, how you say, contract thing. But Weasel, walk us through it real quick.
Well, Kaepernick, he wants to be like one of those $18 million guys. Now, Kaepernick, if you look at his stats, I mean, the guy, you know, he has a good touchdown-interception ratio. The one for Dalton's is not too good, but it's 80 touchdowns to 49. Kaepernick's was 31 to 11. So he's been a starter for essentially 2 years. So it's still early for him, but you got to get a contract extension with the guy. And he did, you know, change the path for the 49ers to a, you know, a winning team. So with 21 touchdowns and 8 INTs, with how he's involved in the rushing game, and he's he was over 3,000 yards. The guy does have skills, but it's like that upper echelon of players. You got Brady, you got Rodgers, you got Manning. Should he be up with them? I mean, I'd say after his next contract, he should get, like, you know, $10 million a year or so. Fulfill your contract there for about 3 years, and then go for your money day. So, but, I mean, I don't blame him for, you know, trying to get paid, but it's...
But by the same token.
But, yeah. So, I think not like 15, not 18 million, not, it's his third year starting. So, it's kind of a little short. It's like you got a guy we talked about earlier, Chris Johnson. The guy had a, he had a 2,000-yard season, about like 14 touchdowns. And after that, he, even though he had, like, you know, six straight,
well,
1,000-yard seasons,
right?
You did see a drop off. For
yes,
his,
he
for
did
his
come
play.
Down from 2,000 yards. That bastard! How dare he?
Yeah,
I can't. I'm not. I see what you're trying to say with the Chris Johnson example. I just don't know that it's the strongest example. What I will say is this: in your own wording, I think you mentioned an interesting point. You got to sign him. So again, putting him in that place where he's good enough, he's definitely good enough to keep. You're dumb to get rid of him, but it's just there's enough negative hype out there, notwithstanding the legal issues that could be impending allegedly, to where that whole situation is awkward. And I think that's why the discussion on that has stopped. But, you know, it's funny that you can make that comparison with both Kaepernick and Dalton, that they're definitely good enough to keep. They're definitely good enough where you have to do something to make a deal, but you don't want to give them too much because they will need the help to finish the job. They're not Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, on and on like that. But we talk a lot about veterans here. We talk about the next generation of quarterbacks. I think it's time to talk about the next generation of cornerbacks and DBs and safeties and all that. And who better to do it than the man who spends pure gold on the National Gridiron Network on a regular basis. No, not just because he covers the 49ers. I mean, he's got that much talent on anything NFL, draft, college, otherwise, and I refer to none other than the man himself, Teron Davenport. What's going on, TD?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey.
Happy to be on. I appreciate it.
Always love having you, man.
I talked when I came in about Colin Kaepernick.
Well, hey, you know, I mean, I don't know if you have a way, if you have a weigh-in on that, I'll definitely give you a shot real quick. I mean, we were talking about Andy Dalton and Kaepernick both having discussions about, you know, their extensions upcoming. I'm sure Kaepernick, in your mind, and mine as well, is worth an extension. Where would you price it at, though? Is he a $16 million? Is he a $10 million quarterback? Where would you put that?
Oh, no, I would put him every bit in the same category as Jay Cutler, as Tony Romo. These are both guys who you look. It's all about the postseason. Both of these guys have clearly come up with various debacles in the postseason. So I'm not so sure that I would put them in a different pay grade than Colin Kaepernick, to be honest with you. I think there's no way he should get less than them. He should be right on course with them.
Sounds about right to me. And if anybody thinks that Colin Kaepernick is overpaid, you go in when you blame Joe Flacco. Game over. Anyways, with that, man, let me jump right into it. You know, last week I was talking to another writer here on the NGN, Brandon Howard, and we got into the discussion about how the safety position really is probably the least appreciated, among the least appreciated in the NFL, because you hear about, you know, the Richard Shermans of the world, but not as much do you hear about the Earl Thomas. Sure, he gets some love, but I don't know. Do you feel like the safety spot is underrated in the NFL in general?
I don't think that it is underrated. I think more of a premium is being placed on the safety position with the way that these teams are starting to get back to that cover one. As you know, the league is a copycat league.
Indeed.
And Seattle Seahawks really have been the one to set the tone. Talking to pretty much all of the defensive backs coming into this draft, they're mentioning either Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, or Earl Thomas. Mostly Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor when you ask them who are some guys that they like to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, it's all about having either a rangy safety like Earl Thomas, one that will allow you to play cover one, and he'll be back there to help out if there's any blown coverages and things like that, or having a guy, a tone setter, like a Cam Chancellor, who is somebody that you saw in the Super Bowl first hit on the receiver there, and it set the tone. It changed the way that the game was going. And that's what you want, and the Seahawks are very fortunate to have both. So I really think that there's a premium on safeties. You look at some of the guys who've been free agents that got paid. You know, looking at Deshaun Golson, he got a really big deal. Eric Weddle got a big deal. Hey, Eric Berry was drafted at, I believe it was number 6, and his deal was for $60 million. So these guys are getting paid, and I don't think that they're being overlooked at all.
See, but I like the way you put it. They're not underrated, Kyle, but they're still given the premium that they should be. And I can't fret on that. That's a fair enough statement. I mean, hey, look, I know I'm fat and I'm not supposed to like them, but hey, safeties have a special place. They have to be thinking men first. And if they happen to be able to lay the wood as well, that makes them Renaissance men. I have to respect that. And, you know, you mentioned the Super Bowl where Cam Chancellor turns Eric Decker into Eric Decked. That was, you know, tone setting at its finest. I kind of remembered some elements of the conversation that you had. You interviewed one such DB on Pro Player Insiders out of Hampton. I forget his name off the bat, but, you know, you mentioned yourself.
Oh, yes, Scott Williams.
So, I mean, definitely some of the same elements there, and it's good to see that these cats understand that as a premium. But when it comes to the top safety prospects, who do you have in mind for that? As far as just, you know, some names off the top of the head that those of us who are less draft inclined, such as myself, who is it we should be watching for on the board there?
Well, I'm going to tell you this much. It's interesting. It seems like people are catching up with me in regards to analyzing this guy I'm going to mention. That's Deion Buchanan. He's been my number one safety mm-hmm. since December, mm-hmm. and he's a guy that people are pushing up their draft boards. I texted him yesterday. He's headed to Philly tomorrow. He's going to stay in Philly tomorrow and Wednesday.
Ooh.
And then he's visited with Seattle, Steelers. He's been all over the place. He's done at least 8 visits. So this is a guy that a lot of people are catching on to, especially after watching him at the combine. You look at his measurables as compared to Clinton Dix and as compared to Calvin Pryor, he's actually bigger, faster, and stronger. Now, a lot of people like to go with the stats. So you look at the stats. He had back-to-back 100-plus tackle season. Oh, yeah, by the way, 15 interceptions throughout his career. So
the
guy
all?
Definitely could do it all. He's somebody that impressed at the Senior Bowl as well.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's definitely got all the mix of the right things there, too. And for the record, I want everyone to know, Teron Davenport, that you aren't a hipster that's just declaring that you thought it was cool before it was cool. I heard you talking about this cat back in December, January. So he's not just making that up, folks. He has been looking at this guy. This is what Teron Davenport was. You better catch up to him. I mean, I know I have a long way to go. That's why I just have you on the show to talk about it. But, yeah, no, that's definitely a name I've heard more, but I always attribute to hearing it from you first. And who, in your mind, which team in the NFL currently is the most safety defunct? Who would be the most beneficiary of you know, going to the car show that is the draft and driving out of the lot with a new DB safety?
I tell you, a team that pops into my mind right away, that's the Washington Redskins. Yes, they signed Ryan Clark, but you look, Kenyon Rambo and Phillip Thomas, two guys they drafted last year, they were disasters. I think that they should be in the safety business, but the Jets are very active and interested in safeties. That's another team. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bengals grab somebody. I mean, you got Taylor Mays and George Iota back there. So those are two guys. There's a good amount of teams that should be in the safety business. And I wouldn't be surprised. Obviously, Calvin Pryor and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix are going to go in the first round. But I wouldn't be surprised if a guy like a Deion Buchanan sneaks in there. And you can't forget Jimmy Ward. He's going to go a little bit earlier in the second round. Throw another name out there that that's starting to catch a little buzz, and that's Terrence Brooks. And this is a guy that could play. He could cover the slot. He could play single high if you want. He could come down and make hits against the run. Very, very, very fluent hits. He covers like a corner. Terrence Brooks, when called upon, can make plays. And he was a presence on that Florida State team. Then you got your convert guys like a Jermaine Thomas. You got another one in LaMarcus Joyner. These are guys that can play corner, cover the slot, and play safety. But they're smaller guys, so they're not as much of your prototypical safety. So there's so many in this draft class, and it's deep. You know, you could even go to the fourth and fifth round and get a guy like a Kenny Ladler, who was accountable. He's out of Vanderbilt, accountable for 10 turnovers. So hence, he got the name Swiper. So there's nice. A lot of guys. I mean, that's what I like about this draft class at all positions. You know, it's pretty deep.
Yeah, no, it certainly sounds like it. I've heard the statement made that this is one of the deeper safety drafts in a while. We'll certainly see how that comes to pass once, you know, the grades start getting dropped after the, you know, well, not immediately, but, you know, after 3 years when people are like, well, this person was a good pick or wasn't. You know, I'm not one of these who believes in the instant grade concept. But, you know, moving to it, and I'm going to ask a bit of a philosophical question and let you ponder on this a minute. A lot of people will look at a quarterback and think about a quarterback's decision-making. And, of course, because they're handling the football and they're the ones who will touch it on pretty much every play, there's a lot of focus on them. How important of an element is decision-making for a safety?
Oh, it's huge. That's a huge responsibility for them. And that's one of the things that, not to get back on the Deion Buchanan topic, but that's one of the things about him that really impressed me. When I watched him in the pre-practice at the Senior Bowl, his first practice that Monday, he's helping the other guys get lined up. A safety is pretty much the quarterback of the secondary. He's the one, he has to know everybody's assignment, all the way down to the linebackers, and he has to get them realigned, because you just picture the secondary, and you just picture the field, the defense, the safety is the furthest back. He sees everything. Very similar to the quarterback. Except typically a quarterback will have a running back by his side or behind him. Nevertheless, these are two positions where you see everything, and you're responsible for getting people lined up and calling the different packages that you have to call. That's why you see a lot of the safeties with the green dot on the helmet. Deshaun Golson had it when he was with the 49ers, and then Dante Whitner had it. So they're responsible for a lot of things going right, and unfortunately they're held accountable for things going wrong also. So it's very similar to the quarterback position in that when something is blown, typically it gets thrown on the safety.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, oh, why wasn't the safety over the top? Well, because, you know, it was actually supposed to be a cover three and the corner was supposed to drop and he didn't. And then this happened. You know, no one ever talks about that, those kinds of things. No, I know exactly what you're talking about from that standpoint. And it's very interesting. Everybody talks about the safety and pass. I remember that in San Francisco, but when the Seahawks went to San Francisco, it was Cam Chancellor over pursuing an angle that Frank Gore saw that enabled him to get a big run. I think it was like a 50-some yard run to essentially set up what would be the game winner. So it's not just as simple as, oh, pass coverage. It's that other aspect of the game where they got to be physical too. And it's just tough to find. Forget safeties. It's tough to find men that are that much athletic renaissance men to be smart and also lay the wood as well, which, you know, what makes a perfect safety so hard to find. I mean, let's put it this way. If you're talking about, let's say, the Broncos, for example, they haven't had decent defense since John Lynch and Brian Dawkins, simply put. So, I don't know.
And that's what's so interesting about some of the guys in this draft class. Like Calvin Pryor is one that, man, let me tell you, he will come up and lay wood. That's why I called him the Louisville Slugger. He got a kick out of that, the little nickname I gave him. You know, he's somebody, you look at a tone setter in that Connecticut game, I believe it was. Yeah, it was UConn. He came up and he cleaned the running back's clock. And right from there, it was just a different story. So Calvin Pryor is another one. That's a perfect example of the guy that has to come up and make hits. And he specializes at playing in the box. He's just not as rangy as Buchanan as far as covering one-on-one. And that's where Clinton Dix comes in. He has a good amount of range. But Clinton Dix will come up and lay the boom on you as well.
There you go. And that's that versatility that we need at the position, wherever you are, in any situation. Wow, man. I'm in a place where I'm being educated just the same as I was in the first half of the show by Dr. Steve, just in a completely different direction. I've had like the medical education and also the strategy education, because hey, if there's one thing I can't do very well on a football field, it's cover. Being 300 pounds does that. It's that simple. It's kind of sad, really. But but let me throw this last piece here, and I'm gonna take it a different direction. I know we were talking about DBs earlier, but it's a question I've been asking the past couple weeks here for our various NGN draft experts. Teron Davenport has said J.J. Watt, but reminds us that Teddy Bridgewater is better than everyone thinks. Brandon Howard. Wait, I just said Teron Davenport. Brandon Pemberton. Goodness gracious. What is wrong with me? See, this is why I need to get sleep. I would strongly, whatever. My daughter's supposed to be born tomorrow. Leave me alone. Anyways, no, but Brandon Pemberton said that Bridgewater is underrated, but that it will probably go defensive end with Jadeveon Clowney first overall. Brandon Howard the next week said that Teddy Bridgewater is underrated as well, but it'll probably still be Jadeveon Clowney. Teron Davenport, what say you on pick number one?
Hey, I'm going to carry the torch. I'm in full agreement with that. And Teddy Bridgewater is a guy that could do it all. His deep ball accuracy is ridiculous. And very good timing on his intermediate throws across the middle of the field. There's not really anything that he could do. It's unfortunate that he's been the best quarterback over the last couple of years, So what ends up happening is he is getting over critique. And that's just the way it goes. But nevertheless, he is somebody that is going to come into the league and be a solid starter for years. As far as the number one pick, I really don't see any way you don't go Clowney. Looking at this, there's leaders for him in place on almost every level. You got a Brian Cushing right behind him. You got a DJ Swearinger, who was the captain of the South Carolina defense when they went to school together at the safety spot. You got some guy named J.J. Watt on the opposite side that absolutely won't allow him to, have ASS when it comes time to preparation and even in-game. So that's another factor. But above all else, you also have a defensive line coach that their coach there, he does not play. And even at the combine, he pulled Clowney aside and he was kind of putting him through some mental tests and, trying to pick his brain and see what he would be working with. And that's why I take Clowney. You take that talent and you match that up with hard work. And, man, we saw what he could do when he's motivated.
90 seconds.
Last year, but I think that if a fire is lit underneath him, he will come into the league. And I mean, we already know his talent. So
absolutely.
I think Clowney should be the number one pick for sure.
Look like Romeo Crennel may be trying to get that next Tamba Hali. I'm just saying, from his old stop there in Kansas City. I couldn't help but notice that myself. Teron Davenport, my man, we got about a minute left in the show here, so we'll go ahead and wave farewell to you, my friend. Thank you very much for stopping in. Also, sorry for fabricating your appearance 2 weeks ago, because that was Brandon Pemberton and I had a severe brain fart. But nonetheless, let the people know where they can find you, brother.
Oh, yes, sir. Check me out on Twitter. You can find me at @TDavenport_BSN. National Gridiron Network. We're putting up work every day. So you can check me out there. Check me out on Base Sports Net, Pro Football Central. Have a few shows on there, Niner Talk Central. Have a draft series doing interviews. Also have a show with former NFL wide receiver Michael Clayton.
Nice.
Beat the Press. So we're doing what we can to put more and more information, more content out there, and I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, man, always good to have you on. Thank you very much, Teron Davenport. And that, I mean, always awesome to have my dude on in there. Anyways, you can always find us on Twitter at the SOTG. But until next time, my friends, class dismissed.